From the Kramer Basketball Headquarters in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, you are listening to the Coach's Edge Podcast, powered by CoachesEdge.coach. Here is your host, Steve Kramer.
This is a Triple Your Pleasure episode with Coach Lance Campbell, Croswell Lexington High School, CoachesEdge.coach member, and Anthony Troshak, Charlevoix Boys Basketball, Coach's Edge contributor and member, and myself, your host, Steve Kramer of Kramer Basketball and Coach's Edge. And on this episode, we're breaking down takeaways from the Hoop Smart Coaches Academy, hosted by Ken George, Coach Stroh, the whole crew, boys and girls staff in Charlevoix, Michigan, a couple weeks ago, ran a heck of a coaches clinic. And it's always good for us to be able to share with one another the things that we've learned. And so the goal of this episode is to share with our listeners some of the nuggets that we've learned from our recent coaches clinic. We all had the privilege of being speakers at this clinic, which means we get to attend for free and learn from a bunch of other coaches, which is the big time benefit for all of us. So we hope that as you listen to this episode, there's a nugget or two that you can take away from listening to us speak, just like we took away from listening to a variety of great speakers in West Michigan at the coaches clinic. But Coach Tro, I'm going to throw this over to you first before Coach Campbell shares. This was at your place. I mean, was this pretty cool experience, right?
Yeah, it was a great experience. Ken did an amazing job of just organizing everything. You know, him and his wife are tremendous in that aspect. So it was really fun. We got a lot of positive feedback back from, you know, the events. And, you know, we're looking at next year what we could do to make it better. Can we move it somewhere more centrally located? Because Charlevoix, Michigan is kind of a tough location, even though it's in northern Michigan. Is there a better spot? And so maybe it's just kind of rotate it too, from one year to the other, but just different ways to improve it. But one big takeaway in general is just the quality of the coaches that we had present. It was just like really, really awesome and humbling at the same time to be included in that group and for all of them to take time to travel. You know, Coach Campbell traveled probably 4 hours. You know, you had a crazy week. You know, Coach Carlson drove up that morning. Olivet came up the night before, spent some time at Boyne Mountain up here. They went to the water park and stuff in the area. But it was just like a tremendous, like, humbling experience of all these people coming to just, you know, share the game and, you know, help each other out. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. Coach Campbell, I'm going to throw this to you. Your first takeaway from the coaches clinic, you can't share your own, but I have a feeling we're going to talk a little bit of run and jump possibly later in this episode. But what's one thing that you took away from the coaches clinic?
My biggest thing, you know, I've been at several coaches clinics, and the reason why I like this one so much is because it's guys like myself. It's a lot of high school coaches talking, and, you know, I can listen to college coaches, and they get to go recruit their 6'10" four man that's trailing in their transition offense. And they get to, you know, have a national point guard that they can recruit. And at the high school level, most of us can't. We got to build our system, and we got to build it from the ground up. And just listen to how different high school coaches do things with their program, it's relatable to me. You know, I take away a lot of stuff. Hey, you know what, I learned a lot from each of them, and they're working with the same type of kids I am. So, you know, they got guys like mine, they got kids that aren't national recruits. And, you know, I love listening to college coaches, and you pick up from them, but it's just a challenge to adapt what they tell you at a high school level. And this way, I enjoyed all the high school coaches. I picked up a ton from them, and then you get to go and talk to them. When I go to the BCAM, I mean, it's a great event, but I don't get to go talk to Tom Izzo and, you know, or John Beilein or whomever's there. They're there and they're gone. You know, I can go after I got done speaking. I spoke with a couple of different coaches, and they asked me some questions, and I talked to them about their programs. And it was a joy to be able to relate to two people, because they're in the same situations I am. You know, they have kids that are playing multiple sports and trying to figure out how we get everybody on the same page and give kids adequate time off, but yet still want to get them better at our certain sport and let them also have the privilege to play a fall sport or a spring sport or how we can bat AAU basketball or whatever. So I just, that's my biggest, my biggest thing I like about it. My biggest takeaway is that I'm listening to guys like myself that are on the high school level. And it's nice to pick up some points and emphasis of what they do. And hopefully we can relate them to our program and make ours better.
No doubt about that. It goes a really, really long way. You know, I don't know how many episodes I talk about. It's great to have mentors and people that we look up to, but not that we don't look up to our peers, but there's something different about being in a very similar, you know, pair of shoes as the person next to you and be able to listen to the things that they're going through and how it can relate to us as well. So absolutely right there. Coach Stroh, how about yourself?
Yeah, I 100% agree with Coach Campbell. And that's what makes like this event special and also the Coach's Edge special, the opportunity to just really bounce ideas off each other, people that are in the same boat as you, whether it's a school your size or that they run the same similar offense, they run the similar defense. Like I've talked to Coach Donovan from Frankenmuth, who's part of the Coach's Edge, because we run similar offense. And you know, I took some ideas from him, maybe he took an idea from me. But it's nice. So I definitely, you know, that wasn't a point that I thought of, but now that Coach Campbell said it, yeah, definitely rings home of a big takeaway. One more specific that I thought of to basketball, and we've talked about this before, Coach Kramer, I know, I felt like a lot of the sessions were really like, how can you handle pressure and how can you apply pressure? Coach Campbell's talking about pressure defense. You talked about ball handling. There was another session on pressure defense, forcing baseline. Coach Finnegan talked about pressure and he talked about man-to-man defense, and they get in your face and they'll pressure a little too. And you know, the skill work, like I said, that you mentioned is like the ability to handle pressure. And I think it's almost like a chess match in terms of, you watch Coach Campbell talking about his pressure defense, like their rotations, they're going to be fast, they're going to rep them, you know, become second nature. Now the offense, it's like a chess match. How can we beat that rotation? How can we be quicker? What are the skills we need in order to beat that rotation in a run and jump? What do we need to be able to handle that pressure? So I thought that was like an overlapping theme to the sessions I went to. And I kind of bounced back and forth as I was, you know, kind of hosting that day, which was fun, but also, you know, I was doing a little extra that I normally wouldn't do at a clinic. So I did, you know, the cool part is I got to see a lot of different sessions, but I didn't really get to hone in and really focus a ton and write a bunch of notes down on one. But that was an overlapping theme of being able to apply pressure and be able to handle pressure. So
I love it. Well, I'm going to go back to that one more time. We'll just do this whole part in the beginning. And one of my favorite sessions was Coach Campbell. So you did a breakdown of the run and jump defense. And you know, if you asked me to explain the run and jump, and I can do the run and jump. But what I loved about your session was to be able to see the breakdowns of the run and jump, right? And how you kind of, okay, I can explain the whole of a run and jump pretty well. But what you did was break it down into pieces. And I'm looking at all these drills that you shared and be like, man, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good one. And a lot of them were new to me. And so we don't have time to go over all of the awesome drills that you showed us to work with your guys on what Coach Stroh was talking about, the ability to give pressure and the ability to handle it. Great offensive and defensive drills when you're working on repping the run and jump. But my chance to speak is actually asking you a question. If you had to share your favorite run and jump drill that you shared at the clinic, which one would it be?
I love our one-on-one full court drill. We get that generally going early in practice. It makes it competitive right from the start. I think I spoke about, you know, I hate running in practice. Like, I just think it's kind of a waste of time. That's my views and my thoughts. As a player, when my coach told me to get on the line, I thought, you know, man, the heck with coach, you know. And I think if you wrap those drills and you do drills that make it competitive, they're running, they don't even realize it. Like, they're conditioning and they're running more than they probably would if we ran a killer. But I just like the one-on-one drill because it's, you know, you're passing it, you're doing footwork, you're getting better offensively, hopefully passing it. And then you got to cut somebody off and you really got to bust your butt. And cut somebody off and they only get five dribbles. And if you foul, everybody's going to know, because I'm going to say the other team gets a point. And if you give up an offensive rebound, everybody's looking at you. You know, there isn't five on five, and you give up an offensive rebound, and everybody's like, doesn't really understand. You may not, your guy might have done it, but you were on a rotation. So you're kind of on an island. Like, mm-hmm. everybody's eyes are on you. And it's, I think it's just a great drill to get everybody going, and you're rooting for your guys early. And, you know, you got six guys on defense, and you're like, the focus should be, hopefully they only score one or two buckets. Then when we go on offense, we're going to go, and we go both ways. So you got to, you know, righties don't get an advantage. Lefties don't get an advantage. You know, right-handers get to go right side once, lefties get to go left side once, and vice versa. So I like that drill. And then the 2-on-2 drill I did.
Hold on. Let's explain the 1-on-1 drill, like how you start it for a second. So,
okay,
you know, white and blue. So say, yep, 12 kids on a team, six are now on each team, six white, six blue. They match up with each other. Right. Yep. And everybody's going to go on offense and defense on the right side and the left side of the court. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. So so it's not just 1-on-1, it's the white team against the blue team. We're, yes, adding these scores up throughout the course of, you know, this series of drills. So you're trying to win your matchup, but your team's also trying to win. Well, big picture, right? How does the drill start? Like, are you starting on the baseline, working your way towards half court? When do the five dribbles begin? Go from there.
Okay. So it starts on the baseline. So you're on the baseline, and you'd be right on where the blocks are, but obviously lower it on the baseline. So you get, what we do is we try to make it as even as possible. So we get our two best guards, and they're going against each other, you know, or maybe our third and fourth best guards going against each other, and our best big men going against each other. So try to make the team as balanced as possible. And you start, and they're step sliding, passing back and forth, going to half court, and we'll say, okay, right side's on offense. So once that guy catches the ball at half court on the right side, the guy on the left passes it to him. He's directly going, and he's trying to get him change direction. And the offensive guy only gets five dribbles. So let's say, you know, the defense does a good job and forces him to go behind the back or spin dribble or whatever. If he takes over five dribbles, it's minus one. It's a turnover. If he takes five dribbles and scores, it's 2 points. If he takes three dribbles, whatever. So you get the way you lose points is turnovers, by actually turning it over or by dribbling over five times. And the way you lose, that's on offense. The way you gain points on offense is by scoring a basket. The way you lose points on defense is by committing a foul or giving up an offensive rebound. So on defense, if you foul somebody and they score, it's 3 points. If you foul somebody and they don't score, it'd just be 1 point. So let's say Tro and I are going against each other. We're passing back and forth. He goes down. He gets a bucket and four dribbles, and I foul him. He gets 3 points. But let's say he goes down, he misses a shot. I don't box him out. He gets an offensive rebound. He makes the shot, and then I foul him. So I'm negative one, and now he's got three, because he got the point for the foul and the bucket. So there can be like a 4 or 5, 6 point possession, because ultimately you could get two or three offensive rebounds. A guy could follow you, and you could get in a, and you can get a bucket. So there's times it will come down to the last two guys in the team on offense. If you're down four, you can still win, because you can go down, miss a shot, get an offensive rebound, get into the guy on defense, score a layup. So I think what it does is, not only does it teach defense, but it teaches us how to play fast in offense and how to finish. And that's one thing that I've learned most from you, Steve, is, you know, when we used to do finish work, it was layups, and it was nobody guarding us, and taught us so many different ways of finishing. And you got to finish in this drill. You got to score in order to get credit for it. and you got to bust your butt on defense. If you're just going to run even with a guy, most of the time they're going to be on their strong hand. Most of us are right-handed. On the right side, they're going to probably score 6 out of 6 times, and if you don't work hard to box out. And as I said, you're on an island. Your teammates look at you and they can figure out who's running, who's sprinting to get there in front, who's not boxing out. Because when you play 5-on-5, some of that stuff gets nullified because you might have a guy come over and help, and you didn't bust your butt back, but your guy came over and did his job and helped. Or we might have gave up. I'm guarding you, Steve, and you get an offensive rebound, and everybody thinks I didn't do my job, but ultimately I came over to help you because you got beat off help Coach Tro because he got beat off on the baseline. So I came over to help, and that's why you ended up getting an offensive rebound. When it's 1-on-1, it isn't, hey, so Lance didn't do his job boxing out. Flat out, he didn't box out because his guy got the rebound. So it puts pressure on you, man, because everybody's eyes are on you and you're playing, you can't hide from your teammates. No. So
No, I like that drill, and that goes back to I think every coach, every program should play at least a little bit of 1-on-1 every day. I just think it's great offensively and defensively. I think it's an excellent way. And you're incorporating that with the pressure aspect of, building that up into your run and jump, which is fantastic stuff. Coach Tro, going to go back to you. Second nugget that you took away from the coach's clinic.
No, again, kind of a theme. And I think it was a coach from Mancelona that I was talking to. And he said, that watching the other coaches present, and he mentioned, you realize that everyone's kind of doing similar things. And yes, that's all. That's 100% true. And my question and challenge would be, like, if you're doing, something similar to the guy in the same league, same conference or the same county, whatever it might be, how can you make yours better than theirs? One is obviously having better players. And better players might be the skill development that you do in the in-season, in the off-season, whatever it might be. Maybe you're just blessed with talent, whatever it might be. But also thinking of ways, how can I make my shell drill the best shell drill in the league? What can I do? What are some tweaks? How can I make, our pressure defense the best that is available? So basically, like, yes, all us coaches, we steal from each other. We run similar drills. But how can you tweak it to make it a little better than the guy next to you, or make it a little more challenging, or the players get a little more out of it, or they get culture out of it? You're not just running the drill, you're implementing culture into a drill. What are some of those things that you can do? So, that was one takeaway that, yes, we do a lot of the same things. Coaches do a lot of the same drills. And, in the same breath is, what can we do to make our stand out?
That's a great point. I mean, what can you do to stand out? You may be doing a similar drill, but you might have a completely different, point emphasis, what's truly valuable to you. And so I think that's important for us to keep in mind. I would bet that, you could go to 10 practices where they do the same drill, and you ask each coach about it, and they might say, well, this piece is the most important part of this drill. And another coach will tell you the completely different thing about it. So that's a great thing to keep in mind, making things better. Coach Campbell, heading over to you. What's the second big thing you took away from our coaches clinic?
I just like the fact that it's like a 6 or 7 hour session. Lunch is served there. I've went to other clinics and I love talking to other coaches. It gives you a time during lunchtime that you can talk to them. It's only a 6 hour window. It's not a 2 or 3 day event. I go to BCAM clinic, I love it. But guess what? I get hungry. I go to Applebee's. I start watching football. Next thing you know, I miss one or two guys that I was hoping to listen to, or I get to a clinic. I get to a clinic and I run into somebody I really know and I really admire and I want to talk basketball with. And we start talking and it's during, somebody's session. And I miss the whole session because I don't want to be rude to the guy and tell him, hey, I want to listen to so-and-so. So it gives you that like downtime where you get an opportunity. Hey, I'm eating a slice of pizza, whatever. I can talk with a couple people about how our season looks or how their season looks or whatever. And you don't you didn't waste anything. And the fact that it's, you know, it's over at 3:30 or whatever, and it started at 9:00, I'm not giving up my entire day or my entire weekend. And the half hour session is awesome. You know, I mean, like for me, a half hour, that's my first time presenting. I probably didn't do a great job of doing it. I could have done things differently in that half hour, but that half hour window is nice because you try to get through more stuff and it's quicker, and you know, and it doesn't carry on. And one drill doesn't take 10 or 12 minutes because you know you only got a 30-minute segment. So everything was there. You didn't have to leave, and you had it was just, you knew you weren't there all day. You start looking at your watch, your wife's texting you, or, hey, when are you going to be home for dinner? Stuff like that. You know, your kids are like, hey, dad, you didn't leave me any money. I need to, you know, I'm hungry or whatever type thing. So, you know what I mean? It's just a shorter version. You're done at a timely fashion. I love the fact that it was on Sunday. For me, it makes it much easier because I work on Saturdays. So I didn't have to miss any time for work, but I just like the fact that it's about a 7-hour window. You can socialize with different people during your lunchtime. You're not missing anything. And we went through a crap ton of people in a short period. Yep. And that's great.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of great speakers. And I agree, when you only have a half hour to speak, you're like, all right, well, this has to be a quick, right? We're not just going to let the same drill carry on for 5 or 10 minutes because we don't have the time to do it. So it's boom, boom, boom. Which reminds me of the amount of content that Coach Troshak packed into his 2-3 zone presentation, which is also a course at coachesedge.coach that everybody can access. We've had a lot of good feedback on that through with some of our coachesedge.coach members on the website. Coach Tro, what do you think is, you know, 1, 2, 3 of the most important things that you covered in that 2-3 zone presentation, which was phenomenal stuff?
You know, one of them is kind of my next point, but I'll mention it. It's teaching players how to play against the zone. I think you said it. I don't know if it's probably not your quote, but you can coach against a man. You got to play against the zone. So that is important.
Mitch Bone of Sanford Meridian High School. That's the famous quote. At least that's who told it to me. Right.
Yeah. We're going to give him credit. Yeah. We're going to give him credit.
Got to give him credit. He's a heck of a coach.
Gotta say Mitch Bone from now on. But yes, definitely like being able to play against the zone. But in the same sense is like being able to play against that zone with certain principles. And you know, we're big on engaging two defenders, because if you have two defenders guarding you, and then you have an advantage once you get rid of the ball. So how do you engage two defenders? You can do that multiple ways, whether it's making a triangle. So when you catch it, two players are guarding you, you know, you say go to where they're not. You can do that by attacking just off the dribble. How can I get two guys to guard me? And then it's pass, because that's moving the zone. Also penetrating the middle of the zone is huge. And you know, we challenge, you know, who do we put there? You know, I feel like it's good to put a playmaker, not just the biggest, tallest player that's, you know, a bigger post, to put them in that spot. So those are some big takeaways that I would mention. You know, learn how to play against the zone, E2, C4, you know, middle. And then, you know, I think rebounding, if you have size against the zone, can really just hurt it. If you just have the mentality of we're gonna take shots, everyone kind of has that freedom, like, hey, I'm gonna shoot it because I know if I miss it, I got my three other brothers out there crashing the boards and we're gonna get the rebound. Or if you you know, you're got some team with speed, you just beat the zone up the floor. But you know, and that's kind of what I was thinking as far of like some keys to attacking zone defense.
And what I'm really hearing is, you know, look at what some of your strengths are as a team and try to apply that to how you can attack against a 2-3 zone. And I think that's a lot that I see teams that struggle with a zone offense is they completely get out of who they are and some of their DNA as a team, because they're playing against the zone, maybe they don't figure it out for 4 or 5 minutes. Well, 4 or 5 minutes in a 32-minute high school game, that's a long time. You could lose that game in 4 or 5 minutes. It could be over. By the time you figure out, hey, here's how we're going to play the zone, bop, 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 it's too late. right? It was a 6-8 point swing against a team that's close to you. They just beat you because of that. And so I think those are really important nuggets that you mentioned right there. Coach Campbell, over to you. Third big takeaway from the coaches clinic.
My third takeaway is there were two different sessions going on each gym. I mean, a session going on in each gym, and you know, it was 50 feet away. So you could kind of go catch both of them, or you could, you know, hey, this guy's talking about defense. I've already listened to somebody talk about defense. I want to go listen to Coach Tro on zone offense. So there was different options and they weren't the same. It isn't like I'm talking about pressure defense and the guy in other gym's talking about pressure defense. So it was two different scenarios, two different versions of basketball. And it gave you a chance to pick what one you wanted to go to and learn from different people at the same time. Oftentimes there's only one person speaking in a clinic and it may not be something that you do. So you're going to leave. And then, as I said, you may go, you'll grab lunch. Then it turns into missing the next session or whatever. So it keeps you there and you can pick whatever one you want and how it fits you and how it fits your system. And talking about Coach Tro, I mean, that was not just because you guys are on here, but that was awesome session. I'm glad I went and I seen him at Lakers last year and he did a great job. And some of the stuff he just talked about, I wish, you know, I would have done differently in our game against Goodrich in the regional. That's the first team that really played us zone. And I coached an awful game from that offensive side. And, you know, and I think we should have put a playmaker in the middle and moved Donnie behind. But you know, after listening to him and thinking like after the game, a couple of days after, I was like, man, we should have done this and done that. And it was our first time really playing against a team that really zoned us up and they had a lot of length. And everything he pinpointed is stuff that we talked about, you know, amongst our staff 3 or 4 or 5 days later. And so now the great thing is I continue to hear it from him. I can go on there. I can look at it. I can say, hey, you know what, this is, and I can show it to my coaching staff and our coaching staff. And we can say, hey, this is some of the things that I've learned from Coach Tro. This is how he targets the zone. I think we can do that. We can mimic it. We can institute some of the stuff he uses. And quite honestly, I mean, none of it was like, you didn't have five different guys, you know, passing the ball 7 different times and 16 screens being set, right? Like he simplifies it for us on the high school level. It's simplified, but yet effective. Like if you play 2-on-1, you're playing 4-on-3 elsewhere. If you put a guy in the middle that can make decisions and make plays and you break it down from the middle, then you know, they're probably going to get out of it. And then you go back to what we do well. We played well against man-to-man. Maybe if we would add more success against that zone, we end up winning that game. But I thought his presentation was great on the 2-3 zone and our breaking down the 2 zone offense against the 2-3 mostly. And I wish I would have had some of that insight before we played Goodrich. Not that I didn't, but I wish I would have really dove into it deep before that game. And I think it would have helped us. And now I got it on paper and I can go back to it and I can share it with our youth coaches and our freshman and JV levels. But as I said, I just like the two options. I like being able to go listen to one guy. Maybe I like both of them. I wanted to listen to both, but I went and picked up 15 minutes from one of them, another 15 minutes from another. And then you meet a friend in the stands and you're like, hey, what did he talk about the first 15 minutes? Can you share with me some things? So then it felt like you were at both sessions the whole time. So just the two different options at the same time was great.
Mm-hmm. And now you have the 9-part video series of the 2-3 zone offense course in Coach's Edge. You didn't have that when you lost to Goodrich. That was up like this spring after you guys lost. And so now you really be able to take advantage of the 2-3 zone offense course on the site. Coach Tro, number 3, how about you?
Yeah, I kind of alluded to it already, and it's playing, you know, teaching players how to play instead of just teaching them plays. And, you know, that's kind of what I talked about in my session. I know John Flynn, who coaches at Harbor Springs, who's in our conference and a phenomenal coach, was a great player. He talked about FIBA 3-on-3, and that's a lot of playing. That's a lot of reps. That is a lot of just, hey, we're going to get the ball out of the net. We're playing fast, and we're teaching you how to play. And you can get a ton of just practice and reps in that small amount of time. And with that being said, like, you're also working on player development. You know, you talked about player development, the importance of player development. So you got 3-on-3, you got six guys. You're more likely to touch the ball in a 3-on-3 because you got 1 out of 3 chances. You got 1 out of 3 chances of doing this and being involved in this action on defense. So the player development and just teaching players, you know, how to play over plays. And I know, you know, Coach Campbell talked about pressure defense, and I'm guessing one reason, maybe not the main reason they pressure and they run and jump, is other teams can't run offense against it, right? You cannot run your offense against the team that is constantly pressuring you, and they're not going to allow you to do what you want. So if you practiced all week on your 1-4 high sets or your pick and roll or your ball screen offense, well, good luck against Croslex. And that's probably why they've won, you know, 80 games in the last 4 years. You got to play. And what better way to do that than like teaching them through, you know, 3-on-3 or, you know, drills that simulate that pressure, but also the importance of like, we got to be able to play the game and we can't just run play. So that was another takeaway. And I think it's, you know, if you can incorporate that into your player development in terms of like your offense, like, you know, the read and react's a big one where they really incorporate their offense into their skill development and practice. And I think that's a good way for coaches to practice both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well said. This goes into competing and some player development as well as Coach Hedinga, Lake Superior State University. And he did a bunch of high intensity drills, competitive, could be 1-on-1. It could be 4-on-4. He did a variety, and there was one drill, and I had the chance. And I talked to him after lunch about this one specifically. And so I'll try to paint a picture of it, because there's a lot of times we've done a similar drill, but he had like two mixed into one. So if I have 2-on-2 on one end of the court, so I have a defender at each block and I have two offensive players out at each wing and I have the basketball underneath, right? And then we could go 4-on-4. So we have another set of offensive and defensive players out on the other side of the court waiting. So if I'm under the basket and I roll the ball out to one of the players on the offensive team, and now they're playing 2-on-2, right? And if the offensive player scores, their team gets a point. Now they have teammates on the other side of the court as well. So similar to Coach Campbell's drill, like, you might have the blue against the white. And so this isn't, even though we're working on individual skills or 2-on-2, like, this is a full team. You're on blue or you're on white. So if I roll the basketball out to the blue team on offense and they're able to score, they would get a point, and then the drill would reset right where it's at. Same blue team would be on offense, make it, take it. The white team would be underneath at the block. I roll the basketball out. They play again. Let's say the blue team on offense misses the shot, and the white team on defense, they get the defensive rebound. Now it becomes full court 4-on-4. So the white team that got the defensive rebound is now on offense. They're taking it full court going the other way, and they got two more white players on the other end waiting for them on offense. And there's two blue players down there waiting for them on defense. So it pushes all the way down. There's a 4-on-4 possession that happens there. If the white team scores, they get set amount of points. Was it a 2? What is it a 3? And then it resets again back into that half court closeout set, those same two players. And I was asking them about, you know, different variations, and, you know, he's like, you could do it. You could do whatever you want off of this little setup right here. But I loved how competitive it was. I loved that there were two teams rooting for each other. And I think what he mentioned was, a lot of times he'll go for a set amount of time. So let's say I want to put 4 minutes on the clock. And for 4 minutes, the blue team is always going to be on offense in the 2-on-2 situation. They're always going to be on offense. So for that amount of time, I'm always rolling the ball out. They're playing 2-on-2. If they score, they get a point. They go right back out to the wing. I roll the basketball out again. They score. They get a point. They go back out to the wing. I roll out. He said he had a player get scored on 20 straight times doing that drill in college, at his college team. And he, and what, here's what I love about what he said. He's like, if somebody gets scored on the immediate closeout, I always throw it back to that player. I don't want to give him a chance to roll it out to somebody else. Now, like if he gets scored on, he's got to get a stop. I'm rolling to the exact same player and he's got to play until he gets a stop, the ball swung, whatever that might be. So after, let's say you had 4 minutes on the clock and the score is 20 to 10. Okay. Well, now the two white players go out to the wing, two blue players on defense go down to the block. That means you're switched on the other end of the court and you roll the basketball out again. You run for another 4 minutes. And now after each team has had the chance to attack the closeout for 4 minutes, going back the other way, 4-on-4, if the defensive team got a stop, hey, who had the most points at the end of these 8 minutes? What a great drill. He had a bunch of high intensity, like attacking the rim, finishing, probably, you know, a lot of them I was looking at, I was like, boy, I do like that same drill, but I have them coming from a different spot and different things like that. But this one was brand new to me. And, you know, I absolutely loved it. Coach, do you guys have any questions about that? Because it's really hard to break down a drill on audio.
I think I was talking or like doing something during that. I remember it. So just so I know, you know, it's 2-on-2. And did the coach roll out the ball? Or did you say
the coach rolls the ball out from underneath?
You're playing 2-on-2. And then the defense stops it. Where do the offensive players, because I'm trying to draw it actually, where do the offensive players and defense players jump on? Are they on the baseline? Or are they on the wings?
They're on the other side of half court.
Okay, so then the defense gets it. It's 2-on-2 going back. But once they get over half court, it turns into 4-on-4?
Yep. That,
okay, I thought not.
Yep, so it's 2-on-2 on one half of the court. And if the defense gets a stop, it turns into 4-on-4 going down to the other side of the court. If it always starts out 2-on-2 and it resets 2-on-2. But if the offensive, if the two offensive players score, they don't go down. They just get a point and they get to go on offense again. And so that's one of the reasons I like it, is because if you don't get an initial stop on defense, those two guys are just going to keep rolling you over with points, 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 points. And it may be too many points to come back on once you finished, okay, 4 minutes, and now you flip it. You may be so far behind, now you can't catch up in the game. That was pretty good.
Two quick questions. One, do you think if you put guys on the baseline, it would simulate like more of a transition, like off of that miss, compared to like if you put them on the other side, it's almost like off of, it's tough to transition because the defense is kind of already there. I guess you could, I guess. So I was just thinking like, if you wanted to work more on transition, but the guys on the baseline, you want to work more on your half court, you know, offensive principles, you put them on the other side. And then how did he score it? I know, like, because the defense can score if they get a stop, right? They're going the other way.
Yep. So yeah. You know, so they would score. Yep.
Okay. And then they just kept track of that score. That would be a point. All right.
Yep. I think those are both good variations. I like the idea, if we really want to focus on like pushing up quick and getting back on transition defense and starting everybody on the baseline, I think that's a great idea. I think that, you know, having, there's still a little bit of that transition flavor to it. If it's 4-on-4, only four players are down there and the other four are still, you know, coming. So there's kind of that mix. And I was thinking of even doing it like, okay, we could do 5-on-5 down. If depending on if you had a smaller group or how many players, you could even incorporate like some 1-on-1 into this. Like there's a lot of different little variations that you can make to the drill that I thought was pretty good. So that was number three for me. I just really liked that drill. I implemented it 2 days later into my workouts with some players that I trained down here in Myrtle Beach, and it went really well. They liked it. And I was like, hey, that's another sign of a good drill, right? Is if you can like take it from somebody and then go into a brand new set of kids, and it's the first time you've ever taught it. And then you plug it in and you're like, yeah, this went pretty good. Like it only took like a couple times for them to be like, hey, if you get a stop, you're going to push it down. If you score, let's make it, take it. We're going to stay down here. So any time that like you're working on game application, but it's not a drill where there's like, hey, well, this has to happen here and this player has to cut over to the corner and then you got to do this. By that time you're teaching a drill, you're not teaching the game. Then kids start to get lost. So that was my third one right here. I do have a couple honorable mentions. Coach Flynn,
I have one question, Coach.
Yes, please do.
How are the rotations on that? So the two guys on offense, do they stay on offense if they win? Like how many guys would be involved in the drill? Just that if the two guys on defense, if they give up a basket, do they then go back on defense or are there two new guys come in for them?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And I asked him about that and he says he just picks who he wants to be on offense and who he wants to be on defense.
Okay.
And those are the ones that he has. So I think it could be, again, however which way you want it. The only thing he emphasized to me was if you get scored on, you're going to be on defense and you're going to have to work on closing out and getting a stop again. But, we didn't talk too much detail about that one. So I'm assuming you could do it either way. But from watching, at least during the clinic, it looked like those same two guys and then if I do the drill 2 days later, just pick a new set of different guys doing this. So no, not everybody would probably get through all those positions in a given practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So Coach Flynn did an awesome job on the 3-on-3. I snuck in a little bit of his there because I went over and jumped into Coach Campbell. So I saw all Coach Campbell stuff except for the beginning, just because I'm pretty familiar with some of the FIBA 3-on-3 stuff. But Coach Stroh already mentioned that. The other honorable mention I wanted to give, and Coach Stroh, you presented three times. I presented three times. Coach Campbell presented once because we had presented twice over lunch. So we had these 2 half-hour sessions over lunch and you got an encore. And so unfortunately, I didn't get the chance to listen to all the other speakers as much. But Coach Hargraves, Olivet University, had one where he talked about, he really emphasized screening, spacing, passing, and screening. And he breaks kind of the angle of a screen and cutting really down to a science, which I thought was pretty cool. And anytime you listen to somebody speak and you're like, wow, they've really put a lot of thought into how one comes off of a screen effectively. Like you just got to respect that, but it was pretty cool. But the thing that stood out to me was if you have bigs that set really good screens that have the ability to step out and shoot, but also punish a switch, we got to do a better job, I think, in as a country playing ball of Coach Stroh's laughing at me here, of punishing the switch. Punish the switch, right? They had a kid who, I don't know, they said he was 30 years old. I don't know if he was 30 years old or not, but he looked like he could lay the wood on somebody, right? And he could shoot the three. He was a smart player. But I was also saying, okay, well, if he's 6'3", 230, and he gets caught on a switch against somebody who's 6'3", 170, which is a lot of Division III guards, punish the switch. If you have a big in the game that can set a great screen, is offensively capable enough, and I know where this is what Coach Campbell's talking about, we're getting a little bit of the differences between college basketball and high school basketball. But if you have a big who's comfortable enough stepping out and knocking down a basic catch and shoot, but if teams are switching, because so many teams are switching now, be able to take them down to the block and make them pay, utilize that. If you watch offense today, not enough teams do that. What if you could be a team that starts to look for those little switches because so many teams do it and start to take advantage of it? That was a takeaway from Coach Hargrave's session, just because at that D3 level, there's a lot of players that you can kind of mix and match. Maybe they're, if they were 6'6", they'd be a Division II player, but they're 6'3", right? And they're an elite shooter. That's why they're playing college basketball. But guess what? They're really slow. That's why they're a Division III player. There's some type of thing that's kind of holding them back from that next level, but usually their skills are just as good, if not better, than some of those players that are more talented at a higher level. So if you have one of those that are talented enough, take them down low and be able to step out and utilize that, punish the switch. That's my last nugget on that one. Any final takeaways, Coach Campbell?
No, I thought he did a great job. It was good to talk to him, and Coach Hattanooga. So, you know, both having former players of mine at Croslex and just learning from both of them. And I walk away from there and I'm like, the two kids that I had coached, they're playing college basketball, are in good hands because they're just good people and they know the game and they love the game and they teach it the right way. But just something real quick with the 30-year-old, like my assistant coach, Coach De La Rosa, and I, whenever we're ever at a game and there's a senior night and there's a kid that looks like he's 30, he always is like, you know, and Anthony Troshak, we're going to honor him tonight for senior night. He's out here with his seven kids and his grandchild. And so when he said he was 30, I just reverted back. My mind reverted back to Coach De La Rosa saying that. So, got a little off target, laugh a little bit right here, but laughter is good. And kind of glad you brought up that guy, but he did a great job with it. And Trey and Hunter are in great hands, and I hope they have successful next couple years for Hunter and 4 years from Trey. But angles and using screens and, sometimes you can't punish the guy because – you know, they do a good job of switching and taking away that pass, but how can you punish a 6'6" kid when he's guarding Trey Kolakovic? Have Trey go get to the rim, you know, get fouled or somebody comes over and helps and now you're playing 2-on-1 or whatever. So that's a big takeaway. And it doesn't happen at the college or pro level nearly enough, I don't think. And it's hard for us to teach it at the high school level because kids are like, oh, you don't throw the ball in the post after which I don't see Lakers do it or Michigan State or Michigan or whomever. So it's good to listen and I can take that and I can share that with my kids. Like, hey, Olivet does this as a college coach. You can talk to Trey, one of your former teammates, he'll tell you, and then maybe they'll listen. It's a lot better hearing it from somebody other than myself.
Coach Trey.
Just last thing would be the willingness of all the coaches to share, like kind of Coach Campbell alluded to with Coach Hargraves and all the other coaches. Just, you know, if you're out there, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, Coach Kramer's one to reach out to, you know, myself, Coach Campbell, coaches are always willing to share. And I think that's really a cool kind of community to be a part of. And it was just a blessing to have all those coaches in one area. And it was a fun environment.
Coach Campbell, last words, somebody who's listening, they're on the fence, they're thinking about jumping into coachesedge.coach, becoming a member for the season. What do you tell them?
I just think it's a great resource. And, you know, you, whenever I contact you, you promptly get back with me. Coach Troshak and I have built a nice relationship. He and I text back and forth throughout the season. And he offers advice. I offer some to him. And hopefully it helps both of us. But like the Zooms are important. Because you learn from different people, you have, and when you do a Zoom amongst all of us and you have a topic, we all share our ideas, and then you do Zooms where somebody talks specifically about something, and then you can go on there and you can say, hey, this is what's going to be talked about, this is what we're going to learn from one guy that does it really well. And your podcast and just all the resources you have online, you can go on, you know, when I did started my four man workouts, I went on and I refreshed my mind with some of the stuff that you do, you know, on our Coach's Ed platform. Hey, this is a drill we can incorporate in this. We can play a little 1-on-1. We can do a little 2-on-2. We can do a little three-man drive and kick, four-man, you know, this where we're going to place our four guys in our offense. So there's just a bunch of resources. Oftentimes when you get those resources, people want a lot of money. You make it convenient and affordable for everybody. You're not breaking the bank and you're offering various ways to get better through yourself, through other coaches, through PDFs, through Zooms, through all kinds of different formats. So I'm excited to learn from you on November 19th or 20th when you come to Croslex, work with our kids. And I always learn from you when you come in the summer. And a lot of people don't want to share their ideas and you're willing to share. So I become a better coach every time we, tonight I learned a lot from just talking to both of you. And you guys learned that, you know, I laugh a little bit during senior night. So, but
But good laugh.
If you want to get better at the game, Steve and Tro give you a great opportunity to do it. They're great resources, and they'll help you, and they'll help you improve. We all want our kids to get better, but how are we going to get better? Well, this is a great opportunity. The Coach's Edge is a great opportunity for you to get better. You can share stories and learn from different people and share ideas and maneuver different ideas back and forth amongst each other. And if you pick one or two things up every day from each of us or through a Zoom call or whatever, you're getting better. Mm-hmm. And that's what your kids want you to do too. We want them to grow, we also got to grow to make them better.
I appreciate the sentiments, Coach. Keep up the great work. Looking forward to getting across Lex to our listeners. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the Coach's Edge podcast. As our coaches alluded to already, if there's anything we can do for you, please reach out. Thanks for listening. Get after it today.